Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business. Well, welcome everyone to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. It's Jane Atkinson here, and I've got a doozy for you. We've got here today, back by popular demand, my poster child for success, one Mr. Ryan Estes. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be back.
Now, I've got the video on. We're maybe going to see if we keep that on. And if we do, you'll see it over at speakerlauncher.com on the podcast page. And maybe you can watch the video of this as well. If it didn't work out, my apologies in advance. Today's show, Ryan, is all about mindset. I think of you cohesively, mindset and Ryan, so I'm getting mixed up here. You know, I appreciate you coming to share your journey, not only towards a million, but past a million and what's coming up next for you. You know, I used to think mindset was 50% of the equation, and now I believe it's 100, and I want you to weigh in on that. What do you think?
I agree. It's everything, you know, and how we think and feel dictates the entire quality of our life experience. And so, you know, I was somebody that I would say in my first leg of this journey focused very much on my physical health. You know, I was committed to that and very disciplined around that. But mindset and mental health, mindset was always attached to achievement. For me, you know, it was always attached to, I had what I describe today as an achiever's mindset, which is very different than mental health. And so, but I would agree, you know, how you think and how you feel is the quality of your life.
Right.
And,
right.
So it's everything.
So circle us all the way back to when you're sitting at your kitchen table and you've said, we've been together for this entire journey. What's it been, 10 years or something since we first met? And you had a day job and then you didn't and you quit and you were sitting at your kitchen table and you were drumming up business. Talk about those early days and maybe where your mindset was then. I mean,
I mean, I was terrified. You know, there was an overwhelming sense of fear, anxiety, uncertainty, you know, and I think maybe even an internal crisis of meaning. I'd lost my identity. You know, I no longer had the big business card with chief strategy officer on it. I was alone in the dark in my apartment at my kitchen table with a laptop in the middle of the Great Recession, and I no longer had an income. So it was, you know, my back was against the wall. Now, in a moment like that, a little bit of fear and anxiety can be useful because that can be energy that propels you to take action. Absolutely. And you know, that was a moment in time that called for aggressive action. And that's what was warranted. So, you know, my mindset, I became intensely focused on the task at hand, which was survival. And so for me, you know, that was getting up. I had all these protocols in place. You know, it's a little crazy, but I was getting up at 4:30 in the morning, putting a suit on, sitting at my kitchen table. I had a headset, two phones. I mean, I was going outbound, thousands of dials, emails. We had this, Lynn joined me. I mean, my first hire, I hired the best salesperson I knew. We were canvassing the globe, trying to book speeches. And we actually got really good at it. I always say I got really good at selling speeches. I mean, we both, the two of us, and then I had to figure out how to get it good at delivering them, which was the next phase of the
every phase is a whole new set of problems and challenges. So, you know, you were, let's give credit where credit is due. You were already a sales guy. So this transition maybe wasn't as hard for you as other people, but there's no question that going from a really healthy six-figure job and wearing a suit every day to, you know, being challenged with your identity. How do you identify yourself today?
Yeah, you know, I entrepreneur, professional speaker. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a speaker, that I have ideas and I do research and I learn and have experiences in my life. And then people think enough of that to actually want me to come in and talk about it. I mean, it's such a great, great privilege. But, you know, for the first few years out, I wouldn't say the word speaker. It made me a keynote. So whenever anyone tells me they want to do this, I always say, well, tell me, what do you do? And it's interesting. I see new speakers. Well, I have this consulting business, but sometimes I do this. So I get people to say, I am Ryan Estes. I am a keynote speaker. Make your proclamations.
So. Now, just to be clear, some of the teaching that we have over here at Speaker Launcher is to really be elevating yourself to expert. So what we're talking about here is something that's different. It's actually just staking. It's laying your stake in the ground and saying, I will command this stage and I will declare myself a speaker, which it took Ryan a little bit of time to really do.
It sure did.
So let's fast forward to where we are today, because I think that's a good leaping off point. And then we can kind of go back in time and see where some of the mindset shifts may have come from.
So in terms of where we are today about the business, you want to know about the business? Okay.
What's happening? What's cooking?
All right. So, well, we're having a great year. I mean, we're going to finish the year with 75 events. Somewhere between 75 and 80. I mean, I always say we're going to cap it at 75, but we're close to having that done already. So we may add a few more. The business will be north of $2 million. So you're right. We've been on that journey. So past $1 million and beyond. And we see a lot of growth on the horizon. I'm actually going to get a little bit of additional help this year in thinking through a very strategic 5-year plan to build the next phase of this business.
Good.
So we have some decisions to make about it, but we're going to continue to do original research, publish ebooks, blog, content, video marketing. We've made a bigger investment in marketing, so I would expect more content to come out in that regard. So it's been a fun and I'm taking all of August off again. So
That's fantastic. So, and one of the things that I want people to know is that revenue that you're talking about right now is almost entirely from speaking. So this can be done, listeners, wealthy speaker listeners. This is indeed your poster child for the fact that it can actually be done. Now, do we want you to diversify? Absolutely. And right. Get yourself out from under the burden of only having that as your revenue stream. So books and things like that are coming down the pike, right?
That's exactly right. And you know, I mean, I love to speak. I mean, I'm not trying to not be as, you know, I love the live events. I love to go into the organizations and unpack their strategy and listen to the C-suite. So we're adding some incremental revenue streams. We've got a research partnership. We're doing some original research and consulting. So, but you're right. I mean, the lion's share of that $2 million would actually be for keynote speaking. For sure.
Okay. And would you say, well, what would you say is the secret sauce? What do you think is, it could be two or three things, ingredients that have gone into making your presentation so hot? I mean, people want to book the Ryan Estes experience. Why?
I'd say it's a few things. I would say that, you know, from the stage, I think what you're going to get is I like to use the word edutainment. So it's high energy, which is the word energy is a word that's associated with booking me a lot.
Okay.
It's emotionally compelling. So there is emotional resonance, and that typically is delivered through storytelling. Mm-hmm. And then I would say the final component of the on stage or the live event delivery is the actionable content that, based on my experience and our research, we are bringing insight forward that is immediately applicable or leverageable in the context of improving performance. So I think it's the blend of those things. And I would say a final thing is, the way we approach the relationship, our preparation, our discipline, our sense of urgency, we're easy to work with and we show up prepared and deliver all, you know, consistently. So I think it's those things.
And you really think of yourselves as partners with all the players, whether it be your, you know, you're a partner in an event with them. And really, it's not all about you. It's how can I serve you in this capacity? You're there to serve, are you not?
Yeah, it's not about me at all. So let's be very, and I'd say if when you want to talk about an evolution, when I started, when we started, and, you know, I was back at the kitchen table in the dark, insecure, losing my identity, not sure if I was worthy of this or good enough. Mm-hmm. I very much had a mindset of something to prove. I was out to prove that I was good enough, smart enough, badass enough, whatever you want to use. I'm going to prove to you doubters or you people or you other people in Fastcom. You know, I was that chip on my shoulder, and that's how I moved through the world. Today, my mindset is one of service. I have evolved from having something to prove to something to give. Mm-hmm. And it is my responsibility to show up prepared to give unselfishly, generously, with humility and gratitude for this moment. That, and because the likelihood is for the majority of participants in any program I deliver, it is the one moment in our life's journey that we will be in the same space. Right. And I have to honor that moment with all of myself. And that is what this job has become. It is an act of service. And it's a much healthier way to move through the world when you're in service of others versus trying to prove you belong to some thing you've invented in your mind.
And one of the mental notes here is when you were first getting started, all of those naysayers were not external, they were internal. It was all self-driven doubt. And I don't know where the chip came from, because there was nobody who was rooting against you at that moment in time, Ryan.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I may have invented my own, you know, someone makes a comment like, wow, that's a really, you're going to start a business now. It's the middle of it. That's not really, you
right.
know, you
okay.
those things.
The people in your world who maybe thought this was a crazy idea. And you know what? This industry is very misunderstood by everybody, right?
Well,
your family probably still wishes you'd get a real job, but I'm sure that, you know, you're buying them houses and stuff like that. You probably can give that up now.
Yeah, I think now we've moved past, the external doubt, and there's a lot of validation. And so, it's a much more relaxed, enjoyable place to work from. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know, so you have to move through that.
So we're talking a decade here of highs and lows, and I want to talk about some of the milestones that helped you shore up your mindset. Let's talk about something that, what was it that was the catalyst that sent you to your first retreat where you had to give up your phone? Talk about that a little bit, because I know some of the people involved there.
Right. So it was 2015. And, if you were outwardly looking at me, by all external metrics, I had achieved success. I was poised to deliver over 90 keynote speeches at commanding a pretty decent fee in front of some of the biggest brands in the world, sharing the stage with all of the luminaries and experts. So in a way, in a sense, you could say, wow, he arrived. He did it. And while that was true, internally, I was suffering. I had no boundaries about my time and how I managed it. I would have gladly done 120 dates, and I would speak any Saturday or any Sunday. I was so excited that it was happening. I was saying yes to everything. In that year, a few things happened. One, I just absolutely experienced burnout. I would say exhaustion. There were red eye flights and Sunday night speeches and just moments. And there was no break. I mean, it was 12 months, as much as I could take. And so while I was doing that, my relationship and my home life were suffering. And so I was stacking as much business as I could on the downslope of an ending relationship. And by the end of that year, I cracked. My relationship was over. And while I had, made more money than I probably had any previous year in my life. I just wasn't well. I wasn't, my mindset was off, and my physical health. I ended the year with a health scare. I had a tumor in my left arm. They thought it was cancer. It turned out not being cancer, but that had me coming into the new year really asking bigger questions. Who am I? Why am I doing this? And where's my life going from here? And that sent me down the path that you're referring to. I did an 8-day residential personal growth retreat, which is part of the agreement to go into this retreat. You agree to a complete digital detox. So you turn in your phone, there's no Wi-Fi, and you have no connection to the outside world. There's no phone. You can't talk to anybody. So you enter this. And I always say I checked out of the world to check back in with myself. And emerging from that, began the path toward inner work. And I think resetting my mindset so that I could approach the next evolution of my business in a much more balanced, healthier way.
Mm. 8 days. That was a turning point. And since then, you've gone back again and again to get that balance back again, hey?
That's correct. They have graduate programs. They aren't as long. They're 3 or 4 days, but it's the same construct. You do a digital detox, and yeah, it's an opportunity to check back in with yourself. It's a commitment to you know working on yourself, really in the service of others. And I like that kind of learning. I call it learning by immersion. So you immerse yourself in this environment for 3 or 4 days, and you know it's interpersonal work, it's future setting work, it's spiritual growth, and it's work that I prior to that I hadn't done, you know. And so I think it's helped me be more grounded and introspective, and certainly given me some tools to navigate the inevitable ups and downs of, you know, being an entrepreneur and living on the road over 100 days a year.
Right. And when you go out and speak 70 to 80 times a year, there are going to be people who do not like you.
Sure.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, that was a huge issue for me in the first leg of this journey. So another thing that happened in 2015, right around all of this, was that somebody from one of my seminars sent me, and I've written about this since, so you could look this up. I wrote a blog post called "You Are a Total Fraud." So yeah. Someone sent me an email, and I mean, it was, and that was the softest part of the email. The rest of it was an absolutely vicious personal attack and tear down from the way I dressed and talked. I mean, it was rough. And, you know, to think, wow, I showed up and tried to do my best, and this is what someone took from it. And you know, I have a much different perspective about that today. I mean, I wrote him and publicly thanked him for the gift of giving me, because it, you know, you realize you're not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I always say his name was Rudy. I don't want to use his last name, but I always say, yeah. Rudy, it wasn't for you, man. You weren't ready to receive the message. It's
yeah.
Okay. It wasn't for you. So, you know, if you're going to make your art and give your ideas and thinking away, you have to recognize that not everybody's going to agree with you, and it's not for everybody, and that's okay. Serve your tribe, find your congregation, sing to them, and everything else will be okay.
Yeah, and it's easy to focus on that one person who wrote something bad on the form, or wrote you, or tried to shame you publicly somehow. Just know that we're never going to get 100% of our audiences, and that is just a part of the journey. And so
Right. Another
kind of flashpoint and shoring up the mindset, moving forward. What would you say? So we talked about how it's kind of like a whole different set of challenges at every level of the journey. The first challenge is you have no business, so you need to get business,
right?
So, and talk a little bit, we have a hashtag over here called Focused Hustle, which was inspired by you. Talk a little bit about your daily mantra and what you do on a, what you talk about to yourself on a daily basis.
Yeah. So it's the be humble, stay hungry, always hustle. And, you know, humility comes in many different forms. You know, for me in this business, I always tell the people that are around me that I'm working with, you know, for every event we do, just keep in mind, there's somebody who's just as good as me that would gladly go do it for free. So we need to have a, we need to have a deep sense of humility and gratitude to show up and deliver every single time. And then, you know, selling to me, it's just process discipline. You know, you have to, the good, I did work for a Fortune 500 company and I was, fortunately, I ran the sales organization. Yeah. So I had a lot of protocols and practices and metrics and management systems that we could deploy in our small business. And, you know, like a good sales leader, what was my first investment? My first hire was to go bring in the best sales professional I knew and pay her even before I was making any money. Yeah. Because I knew that if we put that level of sales energy on top of this, that we, between us, we'd figure it out. And we did. And so, but we have a whole, yeah, we have a whole system, that we still follow. And she's doing that work. She's doing more of the outbound selling, certainly, than I am today. I mean, we're in a fortunate position today where with our bureau partnerships and Lynn, we're going to sell, we sell out the year. So I don't have to go outbound nearly as much as I did. So.
Right. And your process is something that I'm pretty sure we've talked about it before on a previous podcast, you know, talking about how you guys, deliver on that process, but always hustle. Talk about your version of hustle.
Yeah, well, my version of hustle has changed since 2015. Okay. I would say, you know, part of what I say is today is, you know, when be working, when you're working, work. And then when you're not working, don't work. So I, when we go, when it's go time, I want us focused all in instead of half-assed working, you know, 12 hours a day. That's not the, you know, I'm on Instagram a little bit and then I take a, you know, my brother calls and then I go meet somebody in the coffee shop to network and then I come back and send out two emails. That's half-assed. Like I want to be focused all in, hustling with all of my energy when I'm working. And then that creates the time where I'm not. And I'm, you know, this is going to be the best year in the history of our business. And it's going to be the year where I work the least amount of hours. But I want to get maximum value out of the hour that I'm working. So, and we, and you know, you asked about my process for how I spend my day. And I think that influences my mindset too. So I'll give you some of our new protocols. No calls, okay. No calls or meetings for Ryan before 10 a.m.
Okay.
Period. Ever. Now that's not, might not be on a day that I'm speaking, but on days that I'm not speaking, I need to protect that peak productivity time of the morning. So I have a disciplined morning routine, set my intention for the day, move into my day. And I know that's maximum creativity time. So, you know, maybe a little bit of reading to trigger some thinking and that can go into writing, content development, research. And then at 10 a.m., I can start the structure of, you know, phone calls, client meetings, sales calls, internal meetings, marketing reviews, any of those kinds of things. A couple other things, and this goes directly to mindset and mental health. We have a home by happy hour Friday rule. So, you know, what I was doing in 2015, getting home at midnight on Friday and then leaving Saturday to go speak somewhere on Sunday. So that's, and you know, anyone who knows this too, I don't speak on the weekends anymore and that frustrates some people, but no, I'm not coming to the thing on Saturday. That's just not what we do. Yeah. And you know about August off. So we take all of August off and now we're already into, we only work half day Fridays in the summer. So the we shut down at noon on Friday.
I'll
take most of this December off also, but here's the other huge thing I built in this year that's new. Mm-hmm. So, you know, last year, we had a great year last year and we were busy, but you know, I found myself by about this time begging for August. I was like, if I could just get to August, like I could just, you know, I've worked so hard. If I could just make it to August, I'll be okay.
Right.
And I just said, you know, that you can't get to August 1st and be dead. Mm-hmm. So this year we've built in multiple weeks of vacation along. So I took 2 weeks, the 2 weeks off in March around my birthday, 2 full weeks.
Awesome.
I went on vacation with friends to Tulum. I had a nice dinner celebration here. I went and saw my mom in Ohio. Just total reset time. Spent, you know, just reset time. Worked out, did yoga every day. This year I have the whole week of July 4th off. So I'm going to go to my friend's house in the East, his beach house in the East Coast. Celebrate for a few days, awesome. Be here for a few days. And that actually has me coming into August pretty smooth, pretty level.
I love it.
And so it's just a different way of structuring. And I'll admit, you know, we've worked up to this level where we know where the demand is, and
right.
I've got some systems in place where I can project out and see what's occurring. But yeah, so those are things that have me feeling good and keep me healthy, and my mind's in the right spot. So.
Love it. Love it. What would you say is the habit that you have that has created the most in terms of business for you? What's something that you do on a regular basis that has evolved over time to become this piece of the puzzle that really works for you?
I would say what really has helped fuel our growth is we invest pretty significantly in our bureau partnerships.
Okay.
So, you know, we have some great, great third-party channel relationships, mm-hmm. people that are really invested in our success, know us well. And I make an effort to do that. I mean, I had, you know, yesterday was Sunday, and last night we had one of our best agents in town. He's here making calls, going to meetings. And so we went to dinner last night. You know, and the other thing I do is I make those relationships more about them than about me. So I have a 2-hour agent training program. It's based on my sales methodology specific to the speaking industry. Any one of our bureau partners wants me to come in and deliver that program as part of their training curriculum for their agents. It's deeply, deeply customized to the speaking industry versus me showing up, buying lunch and saying, here's my latest book and here's why you should book me. Yeah. That 2 hours is all about it. Now, of course, they get to see me work. They get to see me deliver. But it's value back to their business. So we just delivered that for a very big partner, and I've got 2 more of those coming up this year. And, you know, it's appreciated. There's value around that. So I thought through that instead mm-hmm. of going in. And so I think that's something we've built, these relationships, these deep, thick relationships with partners, and then we over deliver. And so I think the combination of those 2 things, our process discipline, even pre-event preparation and post of it, we call it aftercare, which is after we give a keynote, what happens next. Mm-hmm. We have protocols around that. And I think that's resonated and helped elevate, you said, the Ryan Estes experience. That, you know, the hour on stage is just a part of the total package. So right. I think that's helped us a lot.
Beautiful. Let's talk about your preparation. Are you still using a company to help you do some of the research on the front end so you're not spending hours and hours and hours? Like, what do they give you?
Right. So, well, there's a couple of things. So we do pre-event discovery calls. So obviously we're going to have a phone call with the stakeholders of the meeting. Depending upon the nature of the meeting, we may interview some audience members to get a well-rounded flavor of that. Then I'll get a briefing document on the company from somebody that I employ internally. And that really is, they're sourcing articles, competitive intelligence, trends in the industry. Mm-hmm. And then we do work with a company that actually does real quantitative research. So, and there's a fee associated with this, but I can deploy a very customized, statistically valid survey instrument and have a data set that A, can help inform maybe how the whole curriculum or conference is designed. What are the challenges, opportunities? I could say 76% of the producers in the room cite this is their number one challenge. 54% cite this is, you know, and so I can walk into the I can walk into a room with a very customized data set, and I can teach the audience things about them that maybe they didn't even know. That's cool. Yeah, that's unique. It's very unique. And frankly, even for the clients that don't buy it, the positioning around that, that we have those resources available and we're willing to do it, makes us unique. Another thing that we've had a lot of fun with over the last 2 years is if it's a certain kind of client, we'll do what we call a site visit. Mm-hmm. And we've done this for retailers and restaurant chains. Well, we're actually schedule a site visit and I'll bring my camera crew in. So, you know, we'll go into the restaurant, order food, and it's all being captured on video. Maybe we'll do a quick interview with some other customers. And then we edit those video assets and bring those into the live event and talk about the experience. So it just creates a much Wow. different level of customization and personalization and relevance. The audiences respect that. We have a lot of fun with it. And I think it's created a differentiated product for us to position. And that's why it's resonating.
I love it. That is a part of the Ryan Estes experience, ladies and gentlemen. We talk about people not landing at the top of the mountain. And, you know, you were in a slog. At what point would you say that you got traction? How many years were you in the business before you really thought, okay, this is going to work?
I would say probably my 3 to 4 years. And you know, you keep in mind, I made some mistakes at the end. So I had another business. I had a consulting partnership. I would say slowed me down from a pure speaking standpoint. I had a lot of different irons in the fire and perhaps was a bit distracted, but there were some seminal moments where I could point, you know, oh wow, that was, and I'll give you one. I mean, we're talking about bureau relationships. I'll never forget the day, you know, we were calling on bureaus trying to, no one would speak to me. No one would talk to me, take a meeting with me. And we were doing this all on our own. You know, I'd cold called Washington Speakers Bureau. They'd hang up on me, whatever. I'd send emails with a video clip out to everybody. And I remember the day that Washington Speakers Bureau called me. It was and he said, hey, we've been hearing your name and we want to put you up on our website. And I said, oh, that's great. You know, I'd love to meet you. And he said, well, yeah, you know, tell me when you're going to be in DC. And I said, well, I'm in DC all the time. I'm going to be there next week. I'm going to be there the week after. I've got a little consulting project there. I said, I could, you know, just get your calendar out and tell me anytime in the next 2 weeks. He's like, well, you could do it Wednesday morning. I said, yeah, next Wednesday morning. And there I was in the lobby of Washington Speakers Bureau because I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went there and I bought a ticket, got a hotel room and walked in and met this guy. And that was the beginning of that partnership. And he told me something that was interesting. He said, you know, you got on our radar screen? I said, no, how? He said, we lost 3 deals to you. And in a staff meeting, someone said, who is this guy that's taking our business? Mm-hmm. And someone said, give him a call. Let's figure out if we can work with that guy. And that's it. So, but you know, so we had some success, but then I was willing to go there, you know, jump on a plane, go to where the opportunity was, invest in the relationship. And that was, they started booking me and then my name started moving around the industry. And that was a game changer.
That is a big game changer. And that's one of the things that we talk to people about is to really just go out and hustle and get your own business started. And they will come a look in once they lose a few pieces of business to you. That's right. It's this old double-edged sword. You know, really, once you don't need them anymore, that's when the bureaus do come a calling. But what we use that for is to take your fees up and up and up. Your bureau partners were very instrumental in getting you from $10,000 to $30,000 in speaking fees. That's not easy to do.
No, that's correct. It's because they end up putting you in places where the fee becomes irrelevant. You know,
right.
If a Fortune 100 company is taking 1,500 people to Las Vegas for a week to develop them, the investment they're going to make in the last hour, the last thing that's said is irrelevant. What matters is it's the message that they want and the person they want. And the more times you're on stages where the fee is inconsequential, yeah, then you're going to have an opportunity to create demand and fee escalation. So it's very true. And if you look at our client roster, the Fortune 100 companies, yeah, the names, the places we've been, a lot of that was driven by our bureau relationships. They put me in those rooms to kick off this or close that. And that created the demand, which does, to your point, elevate the fee.
Now, in speaking about fees, this time last year, you confided with me. So I hope I'm not speaking out of school here. You confided with me that when you did put the fee up, it was right before going into a little bit of a slower season. Tell me how that messed with your mindset.
Yeah. So on a percentage basis, we've just had incredible demand over a 2-year stretch and hadn't had a fee raise. And so at this time last year, we had our largest percentage increase on our fee. And we talked about that and I took a deep breath and went for it. And then, you know, it's summertime. So naturally there's a slower booking cycle in July and August. And the internal panic and fear and all of those patterns of insecurity and something to prove and what have I done came rushing back. And we actually, I Lynn Mandinek, who's my business partner, she keeps, you know, talk about, mindset. She keeps my mindset in check when I get off track. And so I remember I called her. I said, I think we've made a tremendous mistake. I said, and she goes, here's a mindset reset. She says, you've lost your mind. Like, chill out. Like, go fishing or something. It's July. Just relax. And so we worked through that. I'll tell you another thing, though, and around that, something else I did that was very, very useful. Mm-hmm. I have this board of directors, which you have a seat on, and Lynn has a seat on, and there's 5 or 6 other people. And having those people identified and being able to reach out and say, hey, we made this decision and it's a little softer. And, you know, I got some very good advice. And someone said, yeah, you know, when you do that, you have to wait 90 days. That really is the first wave of feedback. And look where you are at 90 days. And if you have metrics. And so I just got some, you know, I have built-in sounding boards around me, which also is very, very useful for mindset. So I guess I didn't even realize it until we got into this conversation, but I put a lot of systems in place to make sure my mind is strong.
Shore it up. And there's likely some things that you are saying to yourself on a daily basis that have helped you get to where you want to go. So you meditate every morning?
I meditate and journal in the mornings.
And you bring in good stuff in terms of reading and taking in new learning. Is that a part of your morning routine?
Absolutely. I'm reading a wonderful book right now called The Second Mountain. And there's a Super Soul podcast with the author.
Oh, nice.
And it really is, it's a version of evolving from something to prove to something to give. In a way, it's, you know, as we ascend the first mountain of our lives and we're achievement focused, at some point we typically fall off, and I did. And then you start to assess, you know, what do I want the rest of my life to be about, and begin summoning the second mountain. So it's a pretty good metaphor. I also keep on my desktop Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich. He has a self-confidence formula. And so that document just sits in perpetuity. If I ever get a little insecure and my confidence gets rattled, I can go to that. I have a testimonials folder. We have hundreds of testimonials of people who've been impacted by our work, our messages, the lives we've changed. People that have reached out 3 years later. I had this beautiful story about a guy who was in a seminar 3 years ago. He said, I've been meaning to do this for a long time, but I want you to know I was in a terrible place that day. Fast forward 3 years later, new job, new wife, new son. Here's a picture of my family. Thank you for what you did. I get choked up because, you know, and so you read 2 or 3 of those after some gratitude journaling, and I'll tell you what, your mindset's in the right spot.
Yeah.
And then you can move through your day a little bit differently. And you don't get jerked around by the inevitable bumps and the way you actually come to anticipate it. We're figuring this out, and there's some excitement around that. It's, wow, we get to solve this puzzle, and, oh, we conducted an experiment. That didn't go so good, but it was just an experiment. That's okay.
We're not lost. We're exploring.
Yeah, we're inventing the future.
Yeah.
And when you're inventing the future, it doesn't always happen in perfect symmetry, and that's okay. There's going to be missteps and little mistakes and pitfalls, but we'll move through all that stuff.
I love it. And I can't think of a better way to kind of wrap things up. You just gave us your little motivational talk there at the end. That I think is part of the secret sauce, by the way, is that you have like this Tony Robbins in there. It just comes out to play on the stage. And I really love your kind of motivational bent to you, because it's who you are. You are sharing indeed your energy with your audiences. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's been a fun journey, and I will say this. I'm grateful to do this podcast because you were with me at the inception. Actually, pre-inception, you know, I hired you when I still had my job. So, and it's not lost on me the value you've provided as a coach, and that's why you're still on our board of directors, and we wouldn't have the business we have today without you. So thank you.
Well, thank you for that lovely sentiment. I appreciate that, and I love being able to hold you up as the poster child, someone who has gone, and let's be clear, there was a lot of hustle that has gone into this whole 10-year journey, and people do not land on the top of the mountain, and I'm so grateful that you've been with us today to share your journey and your shifts in your mindset to getting from zero to over $2 million. Congratulations, Ryan, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
And for those of you who are listening in, I hope that you are setting your goals in those big, hairy, audacious ways that Ryan and his team have done. And I hope that we can be a part of your journey as well. If you'd like to know more about what we do, come on over to thewealthyspeakerschool.com. Wealthyspeakerschool.com. Just Google it. We will pop up. And with that, we will say, see you soon, Wealthy Speakers. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks for listening to The Wealthy Speaker Show. Please visit speakerlauncher.com for your free Wealthy Speaker audit. And visit speakerlauncher.com/podcast for show notes and many more resources to help you catapult your speaking business. See you soon, Wealthy Speakers.